The Brewing Network is proud to present Beer Radio that turns ordinary homebrew, into award-winning beer. The Jameel Show. And now, your hosts, Jameel Zainashef and John Plisse.
Welcome, my brewing brothers and sisters, to the Jameel Show. This is Jameel Zainashef. And today we're talking about Ordinary Bitter, and we're going to go into the style and what it takes to make it, and what it takes to have an award-winning version of it. And it's one of my favorite styles. It's not, as the name implies, very ordinary. It's actually a very flavorful, very wonderful beer. Have you had a lot of ordinary bitters, John?
I actually never have.
Well, I'll tell you, it's one of my absolute favorite styles, and I had just the most wonderful experience. I was in Edinburgh, Scotland. I was a place called Milnes on Rose Street, and they've got these great pubs there where, you know, it's more of a way of life than it is, you know, people just don't go out. People do go out just drinking, but, you know, over there, a lot of people after work, you know, or as part of the evening's events, the family will go down to the pub and they'll go and have, you know, some pints. And one of the most important things about it is this ordinary bitter style is that it's very low in alcohol and you can have multiple pints. You can drink, you know, pint after pint after pint. So
so the kids don't get drunk.
Exactly. Right. Well, you can drink several pints and still enjoy your friends, not get into trouble. You can, you know, go to work the next day and be okay. Mm. So I was in Edinburgh at this pub, and I was sampling a couple of various things. I walked in and I went to get a pint and you know, a pint of bitter, and the publican started pour in the pint, and they'll set it down on this mat while they're waiting for the head to subside, and they're right. Gonna top it off, and me being the want it now American, I went ahead and, you know, I grabbed it and started reaching to drink from it, and the couple of guys came up to me and said, "Hey, don't let her screw you like that." I'm like, what? And they were saying, well, you know, it had about a quarter inch of foam on the top. They go, that's not a full pint. That's not a full measure.
Wow.
You know, you make sure she fills that all the way.
That's hardcore.
And she said, hey, she got, it was here.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, so it's clearly my faux pas, because, you know, if it were about 3 inches over, more towards me, then it's my turn to pick it up,
right?
You
right.
see, and drink it, and they like those pints filled all the way to the rim.
And they don't serve it on CO2, right?
No, they serve those on cask, and they'll serve them on CO2 some places, but the best places they'll serve them on cask. But these guys, I started talking to them, and we started chatting, and we started doing rounds. So, you know, we were standing around, so I would stand a round for the group. And, you know, then each person stands right. around for the group. So, yet again, another reason why ordinary bitters are, you know, a lot of those pub beers need to be low in alcohol so you can stand, you know.
Drink a lot of too.
Four sure. or five rounds. But they take that standing around very seriously. So if you ever wonder where the phrase standing around comes from, it's you stand a round of beers. You stand okay. a round of drinks.
So how many were at this round with you?
Just two other guys. Okay. So the three of us, and you know, I said, "Hey, you know, let me buy you some drinks." And they're like, "Okay, you know, and you buy some drinks." Nice. And then we finish those. I'm like, "Hey, let me get another round." And that was the wrong thing to do. You don't want to do that. Yeah. They take it very seriously. It's one man's turn, then the next, and then the next, and you don't interrupt another guy's. You know, it's very insulting to. Yeah. It's like implying that he can't pay or won't, or that he's welching on a.
So you're still welcome back in
debt. Yes.
Okay.
luckily, but it, you know, it's the most wonderful style because there's so many great flavors, and they actually take on when they're served on cask. they're exposed to the atmosphere. They take in atmosphere from the pub, and the various flora and fauna of that pub kind of affects how the beer is going to be. So, you'll get different tasting. You know, you can have the same beer at a different pub, and it's going to taste a little bit different based on how the publican's treating it and what the environment's like, and so you get a whole different experience.
So they don't actually plan on keeping it around a long time then?
Right. They go through these things, usually in a couple days most.
Okay.
And past that, they tend to go bad. So you need a pub with high turnover. But it takes on these wonderful characteristics of the pub, and it's not funky like a Belgian funky. But it'll be, a slight oxidation, or be a slight, different fruitiness, or, some other characteristics. Mm. And, it's just wonderful. Great thing about ordinary bitters is, again, that low alcohol. And the reasoning, how that low alcohol came to pass was back in wartime, and also through taxation,
mm-hmm.
They were basing the amount of tax that the brewer had to pay based on the gravity of the beer. And so,
was that for all grain?
They had ways of getting around it with sugar, and then not, and then they changed. So the taxation kept changing,
right.
And the market forces kept changing, and the shortages of grain during the war, and pretty soon, gravities that used to be, beers that used to be 8% alcohol are down to 3% alcohol,
right.
But, one of the side effects is, you can drink a lot more.
Right.
And
I'm sure they don't mind.
Exactly. That's, one of the ways that the beers came down in alcohol. So ordinary bitter, it is a, they talk about bitters, and they're not that bitter.
Why did they call it that?
Well, they're more bitter than other beers,
okay.
But they're not. When in the U.S. when we're talking about bitter, especially on the West
right.
Coast, you're talking about triple IPA.
Confuses people
right,
on the West Coast.
Right. Where bitter in England is, it is. A bit more bitter than it is malty, so it tends to be balanced towards the bitter, but it's pretty close to even.
Okay.
So in an ordinary bitter, you're going to have a firm, moderate bitterness, but it's going to be balanced with some malt. It's going to be balanced with maybe a little bit of a slight hint of caramel in there. You're going to have some fruity esters from the yeast and the fermentation that makes a big difference. You're going to have perhaps a touch of hop flavor and aroma. They don't tend to be hoppy like a American pale ale, like a Sierra Nevada. They tend to be subtle hopping, a bit of flavor, a hint of aroma. You can get some that have some dry hopping. They'll put it in the cask mm-hmm. at the pub. And it'll tend to bring out a little more aroma, but they don't tend to use, really resiny, citrusy type of hops that we do out here. So it's generally more restrained. And again, it's a really balanced beer, but it's got a lot of flavors. It's got the esters, it's got the caramel, it's got the malt, it's got the hops, it's got a bit of alcohol, and all of that together is a very nice, interesting, complex package, and then if you add in the changes with the that happen in the pub,
right.
you'll get a quite a event there going on in a easy drinking package. So,
is it hard to homebrew such a light, complex flavored beer like that?
It's not hard to get started, but it can be tricky to perfect.
Right.
Right? So, balance is really the key on this. You want something that's very drinkable. And balance. You want something that you can, drink a pint in a few minutes and be able to drink, half a dozen pints throughout the night.
Okay.
Right. So, I've got some friends that tell me, you can't make a low alcohol beer that tastes any good because you need the alcohol in there. You need 5 or 6%.
Not true.
Well, that's just not the case.
Yeah.
If once you get over about 2.5% alcohol.
Right.
That's enough alcohol to give you the mouth feel and the flavors and kind of that the effect that alcohol has on a beer. Without alcohol, beer is horrible. But ordinary bitter, you're talking about 3
to 3.8.
Yeah. you're talking in the mid threes, and that's plenty of alcohol to really make for a flavorful drinking experience. Mm. The color of a ordinary bitter, it's going to be kind of that light copper. They have a thing called summer bitters that some of them are doing now, which are real pale. They leave out the crystal malts and they tend to use different kind of hops than the traditional Kent Goldings. Those are more pale, but they'll get darker as they go. You're going to have a bitterness that's going to be kind of balanced with the gravity ratio. So if you have Ray Daniels' books, you talk about the bitterness gravity ratio. This is going to be close to 1-to-1. Also for bitters, I tend to go just slightly, like 0.9 to 1, in mine. So so for a 35 OG 1035, you would have about 30 IBUs,
okay,
or so, is about right. Carbonation is always quite low. So when they serve these on cask, and one of the reasons that carbonation is low is that it makes for a smoother drinking, easier drinking beer.
Not as filling.
Right, not as filling again. Yeah, yeah. Good point. When you have something that's highly carbonated, you can't drink very many of them. Right. When the carbonation is high on a low-gravity beer, it tends to become very sharp and acidic and harsh, and it tends to just destroy all the flavor in the beer. You can't really taste the beer. You back it off, and I know it sounds strange, but you get down to a lower carbonation level, and the beer almost becomes much creamier and easier to drink.
As a home brewer, what level would you serve your beer at, like pressure-wise?
Well, that's going to depend on temperature of a keg or whatever, but you're shooting for 1.5 volumes or so, maybe a little less, maybe a little more, depends on... a standard American pub ale will be served around 2.5 volumes.
I don't understand volumes. How do you break that down to like PSI?
So, if you get one of those PSI temperature charts, one of the numbers across the chart will be volumes. So, in the middle of the chart, all those little numbers, those are volumes of CO2.
Okay.
So a Belgian ale will be, up to 4 volumes of CO2. A cask condition ale can be down to 1 to 1.5 volumes.
Wow.
A standard American ale is going to be 2.5 volumes. EJ Fair is probably close to that, maybe a little lower than that.
He doesn't undercarbonate his. Okay.
And then, some of them, they'll go higher, closer to 3. A lot of the real spritzy beers, they'll be much higher in the CO2.
Hey, Jamil, how come you said that you should brew it at 1.5, but a true British one would be in a pub, you'd get it at 2.5, you said, 2.5 or 3?
Oh, no, the American pubs will do 2.5.
Oh, okay.
But British pubs and British cask ale, they condition it in the cask, and they use a very low amount of priming in those.
Gotcha, okay.
And so the carbonation will be very low, very atmospheric. And, good commercial examples are pretty hard to get around here. You can get Boddington's in the can, and it's got that nitrogen thing going on.
Mm-hmm.
At least the beer inside is pretty close. Fuller's, Smith's, Young's, they all have ordinary bitters, but hard to find in the bottle. The low alcohol products usually, you're going to have to go and find them in a pub, and in the U.S. that's a little harder to find.
Specialty shop of some sort?
Yeah, some pubs. There's some English pubs that carry stuff like that. If you ever get a chance to get over to Britain, you'll find quite a few and, excellent opportunity to sample some great beers over there as well.
Why don't they use nitrogen in Britain?
They do more and more. And it's just, it's not not considered real ale.
Really?
If you're familiar with Camra, the society that's, encouraging the drinking of real ale. So, it, Nitrogen just is not quite right for this style.
Okay.
When we get back from break, we're going to talk about making a recipe for Ordinary Bitter, and we'll be right back.
Now, back to the Jameel Show.
Welcome back. We're talking about Ordinary Bitters on the Jameel Show. And we just kind of went through an overview of the style. And somebody in the chat room was asking about sparklers. And a sparkler is a little device they put on the end of the beer engines. A beer engine is like a pump that pumps the beer from the low-pressure cask into the glass, and a sparkler tends to knock out the carbonation out of the beer even further, so it has low carbonation already, and it strips almost all the carbonation out, but it forms this cascading, creamy head on the beer. You know, it's something you'll see, you know, some pubs around here, not a lot, but more, you'll find more and more cask conditioned ales, in the United States. I see them more and more in pubs. They'll have one thing on. They'll take one of their regular beers and do it as a cask. Turns out pretty good.
You get one of those for home.
Yeah.
That'd be sweet. Can you use a nitrogen faucet?
You can.
Just to strip it out because it's got that
restricted plate. The disc.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can.
Might try that.
Yeah. The recipe for Ordinary Bitters, for most English beers, you want a fairly malty background, not huge malty like a German Bock, but more biscuity kind of background malty, and the way to get that is English pale malt. So there's a lot of good English pale malts out there. Some of the cultivars you can get are like Maris Otter or Golden Promise, things like that. And what they do is they take those grains and they kiln them a little bit darker. Mm-hmm. And what that gives you is a little more biscuity, a little more malty, a little more character to the overall base of the beer. Mm-hmm. That's very important in making any kind of English bitter or almost any English beer.
I just brewed your best bitter and it had it. Huge amount of biscuitiness.
Mm-hmm.
Very similar to New Belgium Brewery, actually. They have the biscuitiness going on that, too. But there's a lot of biscuitiness.
Yeah, it shouldn't turn out quite that biscuity. They put a lot of extra biscuit malt and stuff in there. Or what, I'm not sure what they're using, Victory or what. But
well, it's mellowed a lot though, since. So.
Yeah, but you'll get some of that background in there, and it's very important. If you're going with extract...
just going to ask
you. Yeah?
Yeah, but ultralight or English?
Well, that's a good question. If you can get the English extract, malt extract, the Maris Otter base that some shops are selling, I know you can get it online, that's your best choice. If you're going to go with ultralight, or you're buying ultralight in bulk and you want to go that way, that'll work too, but you need to be aware that you need to compensate with some specialty malt. So you're going to add a little bit of biscuit or maybe a little... a tiny bit of aromatic or something like that will help kind of bring the character up. I think it really is the ideal way is to go with an English pale malt, the grain or the extract, and that's going to give you the proper character. If you can't do that, or if you're going to use like domestic two-row, you need to compensate.
What about like Special B or a little bit of higher crystal 120?
Right. One of the things that you want to do with an ordinary bitter is, if you're making your generic ordinary bitter, not a summer bitter. Summer bitter doesn't have any crystal in it, but the ordinary bitter is going to have, up to about 10% of specialty grains in the color range of, 75 to 150 love. And what I use in mine is, about for a 5-gallon batch, you're going 19 liters. You're going 6 pounds of pale malt, and you're going for all grain, and you're going like a half pound of Crystal 120, and I like to use a quarter pound of Special Roast.
Really?
To kind of give a little character. Now you could go
color from that too.
You pick up some color, and it gives that that slight caramel background plus a, you know, a little tweak of kind of roastiness in there. Terry Foster has a great book called Pale Ale. It's one of the best in that style series of books. And in there, he talks, you know, about using, a touch of roast, I think, in some of them, for color. They adjust that way. But I like getting it with the special roast. It does a good job. Gives a really good character to it.
One of the listeners we got in there, Impala, says that the Maris Otter extract does real well for his bitters. He replaced it with that, and it made a world of difference, he said, sure. Just using the Maris Otter.
It does have more of that biscuitiness behind it by far.
That's a fantastic extract.
It's a really malty-based, too, Maris Otter and English Light. I mean, mm-hmm. It's not as dry as a two-row or an American Pale.
Right.
I use it for all my ales, but it has a lot more flavor.
Right. Yeah, one interesting thing that people a lot of times get confused on is Maris Otter, Golden Promise. Those are cultivars of a grain. So it's a breed of grain. And
have you ever tried Golden Promise?
Yes. And there's several maltsters. So the maltster would be like Crisp or Hubert or Breese or, you know, Great Western. Those are maltsters,
okay. right?
And then Maris Otter or Golden Promise is the breed of grain that's being used.
Okay.
So any of them could make a Maris Otter based grain. So use Maris Otter as the grain they're using to make their English Pale. So that's just something that a lot of people get mixed up on it time and again.
What about oak?
Oak, I would not use any oak in any English beers, really.
Okay.
I know that, you know, it was, a lot of people thought, well, you know, it's the cask and it was, the long sea voyages and the IPA and all that. But they tend to line them with brewer's pitch, so they really didn't pick up any oak. Mm. And, today, going over there, I don't taste anything with oak. So the casks are stainless.
All right.
So
strictly storage.
Right. If you like that, certainly in homebrewing you can add anything you want and do it any way you want. But I'd try and try it without and perfect the ordinary bitter first, and then you can always do that later on, or you can brew it, drink half of it without the oak, then throw some oak cubes in, and see how it changes the character and experiment. Would be interesting, but it's not something I do. Or if you're doing for competition, you shouldn't add the oak. As far as hopping goes, I for just about all my British beers, it's English Kent Goldings. That's it. That's the hop you use. You can also use Willamette. You can use Fuggles. You can use Challenger. You can use they have a bunch of different traditional British hops, but really the if you're gonna get into competing or if you really want the standard, or if it's the first time you're brewing it, just go with Kent Goldings, and that's the way to go. Most of your bitterness needs to come from early hop additions. So you're doing a 90-minute boil, you'll do your bulk of your bittering at 60 minutes, and then you add a touch of hops at 30 minutes or 20 minutes or whatever for flavor, and a touch of hops at the end at knockout for aroma, and that's it. You can dry hop a little bit in the cask
for
the keg.
5-gallon batch, how much quantity are you actually talking about here?
Well, it's going to depend, of course, on the alpha acids of the hops, but you're between 3/4 and 1 ounce in your bittering hop, and you're maybe a 1/2 ounce each at flavor and aroma, maybe a 1/4 ounce in dry hopping.
Wow.
So subtle. You want the hop flavor and hop aroma there, but subtle. Don't overdo it. If you like it hoppy, that's fine, but for an authentic version, it's subtle.
Couple of hop questions from the listeners. One, we got an email. Have you ever done... Actually, let me hold off on that one. Let me do... someone just put in 1/2 ounce of EKG for a best bitter he's going to enter in competition. She says it's not as much as he'd normally do if he wasn't entering it in competition.
Mm-hmm.
But what do you think about that amount of hops for competition? 1/2 ounce EKG.
In the bittering aroma?
He didn't say. He just said that's what he put in.
Well, you know, as far
I'm sorry. He dry hopped a half ounce of EKG.
Depends how long it's going to sit before, you know, the judges. Dry hopping, it drops off fairly fast. And in competition, you know, it may be okay. There's, you know, one of the things about competition is it depends on the kind of judges you're getting. If you're getting really good judges that really know their stuff, they're going to ding you for, you know, it being too hoppy or, you know, but then they'll also give you some leeway. And they'll say, hey, you know, it's a really good beer, a little bit hoppier than you'd traditionally get, but, you know, it's still really nice and it balances out well and, you know, that's close enough. You know, judges will tend to cut you some slack.
Okay.
One thing in these smaller beers that they won't cut you slack on is if you go to too high gravity, you're putting too much in there. So ordinary bitter should be, you know, in the range of, you know, a 1035 beer. And, you know, it goes up to like, the style goes up to maybe 1040. Hmm. And if you're making a 1050 beer and entering as an ordinary bitter, the judges that know what they're doing are going to say, this is too big a beer. You know, it's not to style. You've gone overboard. And they'll ding you on that just as much as they would for something else. So, you know, you really want to, you know, stick within the guidelines. It does, you know, judges will catch that. They, you know, they're not going to notice, you know, 1042 over 1040. But, you know, they'll probably say, well, yeah, it's towards the high end of the style. They'll notice that.
And the email question was, have you ever done the late hop edition that you've talked about, you know, like last 10 minutes of the boil for an OB?
No, I haven't. And the reason I haven't is that's going to give you too much hop flavor and hop aroma in this style. Again, it needs to balance with the malt character. It needs to balance with the fruity esters. And if you do that late hop thing, it's going to overwhelm the fruity esters. It's going to overwhelm the caramel. It's going to overwhelm the malt. And it's all going to be about the hops, and that is not this style. This style is balanced, and it's, you know, you're able to, in a good rendition of the style, you're able to pick up, you know, the caramel. You're able to pick up the, you know, the malt base. You're able to pick up the fruity esters from the yeast. You're able to pick up, you know, the hops, and you're able to pick them all up, and plus get the character of the pub if they're doing, you know, cask ales and allowing the pub air to get in there and not using cask breather or anything. You can actually tell the difference on that. And you can tell the difference day to day. You can tell the difference between the morning and the night. So when you go in for your 8 a.m. beer for breakfast versus your 8 p.m. beer for after dinner, they're slightly different.
Right.
And you need to be able to tell that. If you did a lot of hopping, why are you laughing? If you did a lot of hopping, like late hopping, then that's going to obliterate all that. It still could be a, you know, if that's the way you like to drink it, you know, great. You know, you can go ahead and do that. But it's important to understand this is about a balanced style.
What this is earlier in the chat room. What formula do you use for hop calculations? Rager, Tinseth, Grants? I guess the measurement of hop then, right?
Right. I'd have to look and see which one I'm using.
It's just ProMash that'll do it for you, right?
That's what right, you're doing. But what they're talking about, there's three settings in there.
Gotcha.
And if you're doing, and actually on one or two of those, if you are trying to do the late hopping trick, it doesn't believe any bitterness comes from late hopping, and you'll get like zero bitterness from, or it'll give you way too much or something. There, one of them's kind of screwy. They're all kind of approximations. I think I use Rager for everything. So I can check that and add it back on the chat. All right. So after the break, we are going to talk about the process for brewing ordinary bitters. We'll talk about water and things like that, and also some Q&A coming up.
This is The Jameel Show.
Welcome back. This is The Jameel Show. We're talking about ordinary bitters today. And we just kind of went through what goes into a recipe for ordinary bitter. And now we're going to talk about the process. So we had a recipe of for 5 gallons, 6 pounds of English pale malt, a half pound of Crystal 120, and a quarter pound of special roast, and about 30 IBUs using Kent Goldings, some for aroma, some for flavor. So as we go to make an ordinary bitter, we're going to talk about first the water. And, you know, I'm a big proponent of just using the water you have. You know, filter it for chlorine, but that's about
water.
It. Yeah.
Why is that?
You know, because I taste so many beers that are overdone with salt additions.
Okay. Kind of funkies up the beer a little bit? Or
yeah, it makes them chalky or minerally or metallic or, you know, just kind of harsh.
What about, like, lactic acid and phosphoric acid?
Oh yeah, I adjust my water for pH, but you know, not for
mash.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things for you know, beers was the Burtonizing of water, right?
Right.
So, in the past, you know, they would make adjustments to the water to with gypsum and such to increase the hoppiness and the hop character and make them more bitter. They did that for IPAs, and now it's, you know, gone down into the pails and ordinary bitters and stuff like that. Now, you can do that, and a lot of people will recommend to add some Burtonizing salts. And if you were going to do that, if you had particularly soft water, it could be a good idea, and you're going to want to add maybe a half teaspoon into 5 gallons of some sort of Burton salts. And that'll help with the hop bitterness and character. Me, if you got a moderate water, you know, just try it that way first, and you know, you can always adjust on other ones. I do all my beers without any sort of mineral salts.
And you make pretty good beer.
It turns out all right.
Just all right.
So if you're doughing in, you're going to want to do a single infusion mash. All these British beers, you know, the grains are really well modified, and you're going to want to do a mash temp of, say, 152. If you want more body in it and a little less alcohol, you're going to go, you know, higher mash temps. I've gone, you know, anywhere, I've experimented anywhere from 150 to 156. And I like 152 to 154 is really a good temperature for these beers.
Sweet spot.
Yeah, you know, you don't want them too chewy, but you do need some residual dextrins in there to kind of give it a bit of mouthfeel. Otherwise, it can end up awfully thin.
And you mash out too, don't you?
Yeah, I raise the mash temp up to like 167.
And then you
sparge out. You know, yeah, not for any particular reason, but just. Because that's how I was taught, and I haven't experimented with not doing it. So, you know, that, I guess that's open to interpretation.
Well, it works, so you're okay.
Yeah, it works all right. now, if you were doing this and you're going with extract, of course, you can add the extract in, you know, at the beginning. It's a fairly light beer. It's a good beer to make if you're like a partial boil brewer as well, because... you know, there's not a lot of extract in there that's going to get caramelized. You won't have much of that problem, and you know, you can get the IBUs you need easily in a half batch still. And then, you know, when you add the water, so it works out fairly well that way. Your hop additions, again, you're going to want to do a 90-minute boil. You do like a 60-minute bittering addition. You do like a between 30 and 10-minute. Flavor addition and you know, a knockout addition of aroma hops or even a hop back or whatever you want.
What about a extract recipe? Like, how like 4 to 5 pounds of extract would you use?
For
grains.
So for extract recipe, you're going to go with you replace that 6 pounds of it was pale malt with you know, 4.3 pounds of liquid malt extract. If you you know, if you're coming up with your own recipe, you want to target you know, in the 10.32 to 10.40 range for your gravity, and again the bittering ratio is, you know, 0.8, 0.9 to 1. So for 10.35 recipe, I'm going with 30 IBUs. And that seems to have a nice balance. Again, it's all about balance and drinkability. And you want it to be bitter, but not so bitter that it's not smooth and drinkable.
Well, what about the flavor of the hops? What do they smell like, taste like?
Kent Goldings have kind of a floral, slightly spicy kind of note to them. Hmm. Fairly distinct and used in a lot of English beers. And it's one of my favorites. I'll use it for just about any English beer. I'll use it for bittering. I use it all the way through all my English ales. I think it's a great choice. You can buy yourself, a big sack of English Kent Golding hot pellets and use those for all your English beers, and you're not going to go wrong.
Nice.
It's a great hop to use.
What about yeast?
Well, when you get to ferment, you're going to want to use an English ale yeast. And the reason you can't use something like California ale yeast or something like that is it's not going to give you the fruity ester profile and the low attenuation that you get with these English ale yeasts. So the English ale yeast, especially in these lower gravity beers, it is going to not attenuate quite as much, and you're going to get the fruity ester. So you can use... my favorite is the White Labs WLP 002, or the 005 is good. They have their London Ale, Essex Ale, Burton Ale.
They want me to make sure you said Big Sack.
Big Sack, yeah, exactly.
You're talking hops.
I saw your face.
Everyone needs a Big Sack. Y Yeast makes a really nice 1968. Yeast, and their 1318, those are also excellent yeast for this. And you can use dry, you can use the Saffale, the 04, or there's a couple others, Nottingham and a few others that are.
Do you find that some yeast, especially English yeast, actually contribute a biscuity flavor to your ales?
No, they shouldn't really biscuity, but there are some yeasty characteristics that might be similar to a biscuity.
I've used the 005 in just like a normal American pale ale before, mm-hmm. and I got a biscuity note out of it. But I also use Maris Automall too, so that's probably contributed to it.
Right.
But
biscuity is similar to a lot of other flavors, and are you 100% certain it was biscuity, or maybe something else that was enhancing the biscuity that was already there? Or it's very difficult to make sure.
Okay.
When you ferment these, you're going to want to ferment in the range of 66 to 69. It's I ferment mine around 67.
Okay.
Everyone will ask, well, do you make a starter for these? The
of course you do.
Well, not necessarily.
Or you repitch,
right? Or you what I tend to do a lot of times is I'll make a 5 gallon batch of ordinary bitter at 10:35. Now, what starting gravity would tell you should make your starters at? 10:35. So it's like starter wort in a way.
Just pitch a vial.
And you can pitch a vial in and works quite well.
Okay,
so you can put one vial in, two vials in if you want. If I'm entering in a competition, I'll do two vials.
Right.
But if I'm not, I'll just do one vial. I'll drink that beer myself, give it away, whatever. And then the yeast cake off of that is an excellent yeast cake to make all your other British beers. So you're going to be able to use that yeast for, split that out, maybe make a porter, maybe make, an English pale ale, maybe make an English IPA, take that yeast from those, make a English barley wine. So you can take that yeast and use that cake. And it's a great way to start yourself off with a good yeast cake. So that's one of my tricks. That, and I do Scottish ales with the California ale yeast to do the same thing, to get my starter on a California ale yeast. So, you're going to ferment in that 67, 68 range, and that should give you enough fruity esters to be noticeable in a smaller beer like this.
And you want those fruity esters because it's part of style.
Not huge and overwhelming,
right.
But subtle in background where you go, oh, yeah, I notice a little bit of, pear in there, and there's a little bit of fig or whatever, as it blends with the caramel, and you're going to have these different characteristics of the yeast that kind of balance out with everything else, that's key way to get a lot of character in the beer.
I get a cherry kind of flavor from the 005, mm-hmm. as far as the fruity esters concerned,
which is really cool. You mm-hmm. can try the different yeasts that are out there, mm-hmm. and it gives you quite a different range. It's a they have a lot of yeasts available, the yeast companies, so you have a good opportunity to try different things and experiment.
Got some people who use their milds for starters.
And exactly.
And somebody else used, a mild as a starter, and someone used 5 gallons of bitter as a starter for their porter.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly the thing to do.
Yeah.
So milds, ordinary bitters, Scottish ales, those are all real low-gravity beers that make excellent starters for other beers.
Nice. And they don't. It doesn't affect the flavor at all because you're actually putting a beer into a beer?
No, because there's very little beer left in the yeast. You know, you drain off the spent beer and pitch us a yeast, and you can wash it with some water if you want. And these beers are fairly subtle overall, so there's not a lot of effect on other beers, especially if you're going into a bigger beer. You know, it tends to mask it pretty well. There tends to be not a lot of character there, so it makes a great starter. When you go to serving these, you're going to want to serve them a little warmer, all right? So around 50 degrees, they say up to 55 degrees. I serve mine around 50, and I let it warm up a little bit as I drink it, and with less CO2, okay? The warmer temps and the less CO2 is going to allow you to have a creamier beer. It's going to, the warmer temps bring out more of the flavor and aroma of the beer and make for a more interesting drinking experience.
So a good pressure was about 6 pounds, roughly, if you can carbonate it and let it age, serve it.
Yeah, and it depends on the temperature of your fridge.
Okay,
so if you're keeping it around 50, then you're going to need higher. If you're keeping it around, you know, in the 30s, you're going to need lower.
Okay.
I tend to keep mine, fairly cool, and I put a real low pressure on it. Just don't over-carbonate them. There's a magic point that you'll realize if you put a low amount of pressure on it, check it each day, take a bit each day and see as it carbonates. At one point, it'll just be the most fantastic beer, and then in a day or two, it's not going to be any good anymore, and you've added too much carbonation.
Interesting.
All of a sudden, it seems thin, it seems sharp, it seems too bitter, it seems too acidy, it doesn't seem right anymore.
So in competition, how do you get that carbonation level into the bottle?
Well, I'll go, you know, right to that point where, it seems perfect. Then I'll leave it like another day or so, and then I'll disconnect it.
Okay.
And then when I counter pressure fill, you tend to lose a little bit.
Sure.
And you tend to lose a little bit in the cup when the judges pour, and they tend to shake it a lot and wait, quite a bit before they actually taste it. So a lot of CO2 gets driven off that way. And when you do these ordinary bitters, milds, Scottish light ales, balance is really key in all these, and drinkability. They're hugely drinkable beers, so you should be able to drink pint after pint, and they should be flavorful, just not hugely alcoholic.
Very nice.
I just want to go back to the, mostly because I'm intrigued by this, back to the yeast and the repitching there, basically. They didn't even clean their yeast. They just basically, the guy racked his bitter, left the yeast cake in the conical or the carboy, and poured his new wort right on top of it.
Well, and you can do that. The thing is, you don't want to overpitch your yeast either. And if you don't want to pitch a lot of dead cells and trub and junk like that. And what that can do is affect the ability to form a head on the beer. Mm-hmm. It can affect the ability of the yeast in there to ferment. It can affect the overall flavor profile. You can get a lot more yeast autolysis in something like that if you've got a bunch of dead cells and then you're putting them into your fresh beer.
Yeah.
Those cells are already dead. They will start to eventually break down, and the other yeast will consume them. Bacteria will consume them. There tends to be a higher level of bacteria in that cake of yeast. And if you just mix it with some sterile water, shake it up, and let the crud fall to the bottom, you're actually reducing that quite a bit. So,
okay.
And then there's the pitching calculator on MrMalty.com, and that'll tell you how much yeast you should be using for a given batch, given gravity. It's easy to use, and that's really the better way to go.
Okay.
So what I do is I'll split it up. I'll get a couple of bottles, and I'll put half the cake into one, half the cake into another, or I'll make one two-thirds and one third, depending on what I think I might be doing. And then I can use that for two different beers. I can brew two other beers and two other beers from that. And, you keep splitting it, and makes for the ability to do a lot of different beers.
Okay.
Cheers.
Hey, what's the difference between an ordinary bitter and a mild? Someone was saying they look real similar on the recipe sheet.
Well, ordinary bitter is going to be slightly more bitter and focused. So it's going to have a moderate level of bitterness, and a mild is going to be malt centered. Milds tend to be darker in color. There are pale milds and there are dark milds, but most of them tend to be dark milds, and they tend to have some roastiness to them. Mm-hmm. And other characters, they tend to be a lot more specialty grains in that, and that kind of focus. And whereas the bitter tends to be, you know, just a malt background with a hint of caramel, mm-hmm. and more bitterness. And a mild will never have hop aroma or hop flavor. It shouldn't really have either. It can, but generally does not. And an ordinary bitter will have some. It won't be overwhelming, but it should have some.
Okay.
That's kind of the difference.
Okay.
So there's, you know, dark mild, pale mild, there's ordinary bitter, and there's what they call summer bitter, which is this, lighter color bitter without the caramel now.
All right. If you were to overshoot your gravity by accident, would you enter it, like, as a special best bitter or an ESB, or are they completely different styles?
Or would I just pour it out?
Or would you just pour it out?
Well, depends on, because what happens is if you overshoot your gravity, mm-hmm. you probably didn't add, and you find that out after you've finished boiling and all that, you probably didn't add the right amount of hops.
Okay.
Right? So, you know, and it's all about balance. In brewing the best beers possible, it's all about, you know, getting the right balance for the style and making the beer the most drinkable. And so if you overshot your gravity and you bittered it like it was an ordinary bitter, but it was like, you know, 10.50, there's not much you can do. It's you could add maybe some hop extract, some bittering extract, or do something along that line to try and adjust it, and then or you could cut it with some water. But either way, it just never seems to work out quite right. So it depends on how far off it was. Generally, I'll just bring it down, have Justin drink it. Otherwise, I'll just pour it out.
I'll drink it.
I'll drink it.
Anything you got, bring it down.
So it's an interesting question, and that happens, and that's one of the reasons that it's important to brew to style. Mm-hmm. I think just for a learning process, not for drinking or anything else, but giving yourself a target and understanding, it's not it's important that the bittering be on the money, that the gravity be on the money, that all these characteristics be that there are targets and there are ways to hit those targets, and you want to be able to meet all of those measures, and that's brewing to style. And once you learn how to do that, then you can craft your own. You can say, well, I really want to make a beer that's sweeter or drier or bigger or smaller or whatever, and you then you have the tools and the skill set to do it. But unless you can pass a quiz of doing these to style, it's very hard to really, spread your wings and fly.
Right. What about if you mash at a lower temperature by accident, like 146, 148, if you overshoot it?
It's going to turn out a little dry. If you're real worried, you could throw in, some maltodextrin or something like that.
Okay.
Some English recipes, you'll see a lot of cane sugar added to, or corn sugar added to the recipes. And the problem with that is it tends to really thin out the beer. Right. And, the English brewers were doing that, for cost savings for a while, and it kind of became part of the recipe. And I really don't use – I'll use sugar in something like an English barley wine when you want to keep it from being cloying. But in a small beer, really, I feel, does not have any place. It really doesn't add any, specific flavors, straight sugar. It just thins the beer out, and you don't want that in a small beer like this. You can add – in a mild, you could add some molasses or some treacle or something like that.
Right.
But use some restraint. I wouldn't go overboard on those.
All right, you got to wrap it up. Crotchrot's in the chat room. You ready for this?
Yeah.
He's wondering if you named your website MrMalty.com because I'm the best brew in the world.com, betterrecognized.com, and kisstheringed.com were taken.
Kiss the ring.
Yeah, that's the case.
That's exactly why.
I was surprised, but they were all taken.
I'm curious if you can wrap it up by giving us a summary of exactly what you would do if you were going to brew this guy tomorrow.
Right. So what I would do is I'd get myself a tube of White Labs WPL002 English Ale Yeast. I would do a five-gallon batch with 6 pounds of English pale malt. I'd use the Crisp Maris Otter. I would use a half pound of Crystal 120. I'd use a quarter pound of special roast malt. I'd use a mash temperature of 152. I would use East Kent Goldings for my bittering and other hops, about 30 IBUs. I would either pitch that tube straight in or make a small starter, just kind of activate the tube up and pour it in. I'd use oxygen. I would ferment around 67 degrees. And in the boil, I'd go 90-minute boil, 60-minute initial bittering, and then a couple of small hop additions later in the boil. And I'd be shooting for an original gravity about 1035 or so, finishing gravity about 1.009 for finishing gravity. SRM would be about 10 or 11, and again, you're going for a real balance overall, and moderate carbonation. Go for a volume and a half of carbonation, and that gets you a real nice ordinary bitter. And again, the flavor should be anything but ordinary. It should be a nice, flavorful beer with good body to it, very drinkable. But you have a pint, and you can drink 3-4 pints and still be just fine, about 3% alcohol.
What do you think about this for an extract recipe? 5 pounds of English. Steeping grains, half pound of 120, quarter pound of special roast, quarter pound of aromatic, and then your hops, half ounce of Goldings for 60 minutes and an ounce of Goldings for last minute.
Yeah, you probably need to reverse those hops. So
okay.
Probably it's closer to an ounce on the bittering, and it's probably closer to a half ounce on the aromatic.
Okay.
What was the extract?
English extract.
English light?
It's just English. It's Maris Otter.
Just
pale
Maris Otter.
Malt.
Okay.
Extract, yeah.
All right.
So to replace an English pale ale malt. All right, so the Sunday show is going to air next, the replay of last Sunday show. Tomorrow at 10 a.m., they're going to have the Australian Craft Brew Radio program. It's a great program. I've listened to all of them. I really enjoy those, and I think you will too. And the next time on the Jamel Show, we're going to be talking about My Box, and that's going to be February 13th. So thanks for listening, and we'll catch you later.
Thank you. Cheers.
The Jamel Show has been a production of the Brewing Network. Any comments, questions, or concerns may be sent to feedback@thebrewingnetwork.com or Jamel@MrMalty.com. All information given during the show is given to improve your homebrew and the homebrew community. If your homebrew is still bad after following Jamil's instructions, Jamil wishes not to be held liable by friends and family. All pre-Jamil batches should be disregarded, and post-Jamil faulty batches should be blamed on John, his co-host, or Justin, the board op. This has been a production of the Brewing Network. All rights reserved.